Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good morning, Rochester. This is Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I don't know if...
I don't know if we have Nick in yet.
Yeah. We're trying to patch Nicholas in, and this will be a first for us. Give us a chance of that. But today is Saturday, and yes, it's 12 o'clock, so you are dialed in to Soundbites. And we encourage you to, you know, pick up the phones, give us a call at 585-966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, or you can also, which lately has become a thing, folks have been texting us, and you can text us at 585-209-9010 for those individuals that are off maybe doing the honey-do list and sitting in the car and waiting here and there as their better half is doing some shopping and they're listening to the show. You can text in your question there and we'll answer it also. But what do we got there as far as the news?
Let me work on that. Okay. Let you read the first one.
All right. Boy, Nick, I got to talk to you. This print's awful small. All right.
Why am I getting nothing? Now I'm getting nothing on the YouTube stream.
Oh, boy. Well, bear with us, folks. We are trying to, like I say, do a first and getting Nick on Skype through the system and get him up and get him running so he could be part of a show because he was not able to be here this week. But Microsoft dismisses Office 2019 as an old and dumb in videos promoting Office 365 subscription. Again, notice the word subscription, folks. That's where all this is going to happen. You know, more and more companies are going to go to the subscription method. This is something not new that we've been telling you for a while, that to keep their profits up in that, that's the way they got to go. When Microsoft announced the standalone version of Office last year, known as Office 2019, Microsoft's attitude seemed decisively lukewarm. Now it's downright hostile. Microsoft releases three videos Wednesday to try and demonstrate that the AI power, also updated versions of Office 365. Man, this is rough reading.
The one I printed, I left on the printer at home.
Oh, I tried putting it bigger. And it made it over, like, 11 pages. I don't know. But anyways, let's see. According to Jared Sparto, Corporate Vice President of Microsoft 365, Office 2019 is frozen in time. The Office 2019 app don't ever get updated with new features, and they're not cloud connected. Spartan wrote, also, Office 2019 doesn't support real-time co-authoring across apps, and it doesn't have the amazing AI power of capabilities come with Office 365. Again, you know, they're just trying to tout one product over the other, and I really just don't get it. But right now, Nick's got to pull up. It's promoting, Microsoft promotes Office 365 over Office 2019. One product against the other. And it's your choices are in the poll. It's a privilege, paying every year. I prefer Google Suite. I prefer Apple Suite. I prefer LibreOffice. I prefer Quill and Parchment. That's a good one, Nick. I got to give you that. That's a very good one.
All right. Can you hear? Okay, so Nick can talk, but right now he's only going through my ambient mic. So we're going to try plugging my computer into the jack. So now...
Try talking, Nick.
you're just going to ramble a minute while hopefully I don't have dead air. And Dave is going to try potting up some of those other jacks to see if we can figure out where this input is coming from. Because we have an input to the board from my computer. And we don't know where it is, comes out at the other end.
Go ahead, try talking.
He is talking. And yeah. I'm just trying not to have dead air while he's talking. It should be going through YouTube, and it's not. All right, so let's see if I undo this. And I turn. There we go.
He was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam around the pole, God only knows. He was always cold. But the lure of gold seemed to hold him in his spell. And he'd often say in his homely way,
there we go.
There we are.
On Christmas Day, we were mushing our way along the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold to the park is full, it's stabbed like a driven nail.
Okay, Nick.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So,
no, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
What we've had to do is put the mic up to the speaker.
Oh, sure. Well, whatever works, I guess.
Hey, you know, hey, you improvise with what you got, you know?
That's so, exactly right.
Apparently, if Rob,
I apologize. First off, I apologize, Nick, for bashing this story because it is so small, even with my bifocals.
It's an 11-point type. Even I can read it with my bifocals.
But it printed on half a page.
So that's not me.
Something weird in the printer settings. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's not me. That's on your. That's on you.
That could be. You think?
I think that's got to be it. It's just all it is the sound bites. It is Google Docs.
Yeah, normally I pull it up on my screen. I just zoom in to make it bigger on my screen, so I could sit back and read the stories and all that. So.
Yeah, I don't know what you're looking at.
Oh, well.
It prints out as a single page here, but all right.
Yeah, no problem. No biggie.
The point is, Microsoft wants you to stop buying their products and start renting their products. That's their point. They don't care about, they don't want to sell you anything anymore. They want to rent you stuff. They want to rent you Office. They want to rent you Windows. Eventually, they're going to rent you everything.
That's what we've been talking about for a while, though, is that's the way of the future, and that they can continually making money, even though they may not, like you say, you're going to buy it now, and they could, avoid, say, any major feature upgrades down the road for a year or two, but you still got to pay your subscription to still continue to use what you got.
And that's, so,
and that's exactly the thing. The problem is, if you stop paying, you lose access to everything you've written.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can download it, but now you don't have anything to read it on. Right? If your Office product is in the cloud and you lose access to the cloud,
your host.
Your documents.
And the weird thing is
that's not true of obviously. Oh, go ahead.
I say the weird thing is that it's technically the same program, so when you subscribe, you still download the Office app, but it doesn't have all that real-time collaboration over the internet. So it's features they've added through the Microsoft Cloud services that you get when you buy the subscription. And for some people, those are big deals because it does let you, co-edit with someone else over the internet. Instead of making a change, emailing it to them, they make the change back and email it back to you.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
of course, you can do that in Google Docs. You've been able to do that for years Google Docs, and they've added that feature. But Google Docs is still free.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Oh, wait, it's still free. Has been, always will be.
Right. Now there are a few things that you get in Microsoft Office. Excuse me, Office 365 that you don't get in Google Docs. But that's mostly esoteric stuff. For lawyers and for doctors and for, like that sort of thing. It's not the normal stuff that people use every day. I've written 3 books and I'm in the process of a 4th that I wrote entirely on Google Docs. I can bring stuff in from the internet. I can add pictures. I can add whatever I want to do to it. And it works perfectly. And I can open it on any device, anywhere. I can open it on my desktop, my laptop, my Chromebook, my phone, my tablet, my watch. Probably if they're trying it on my watch. But, you know, I can open it anywhere. I can use it anywhere. I can send it to people. I can add people in as collaborators. For example, the news I send to you guys just by clicking file, email collaborators, bang, and you get it. It's done. In addition, you have the ability to edit this document alongside me as I write. And in fact, we see each other's edits. We can chat with each other. There's just an amazing number of things that you can do. And Microsoft Office 365 is giving us that same set of abilities. But they are charging for it, and they are $70 a year.
$99 a year, and you get five computers, five phones, and five tablets. So if you have a couple, three people with phones and tablets, that can be a pretty significant savings versus $150 per computer.
Right. But you pay that $99 every year.
Yeah.
And so a year and a half down the road, you're now paying more than you would have paid if you had bought Office 2019. Now, the issue, of course, is that Office is no longer just Office. So if somebody says, oh, I have Microsoft Office, your next question is, which Office? I mean, it used to be, was it Office 2019 or 2011, probably. But now it's, is it Office 2019, 2011, 2015, Office 365? Which one is it?
And some of the Office versions include Publisher and Access and Outlook, and some of them don't. You know, the home and student version doesn't include Outlook because most, you know, home users don't need Outlook. They already have an email program in their computer anyway. And right. So that's one way of saving a little money by not using Outlook, which is something we like to say anyway, don't use Outlook.
You're right. But if you want Office 365 Personal, that's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Publisher, and Access, and OneDrive, and Skype. Hey, guess what? The free Skype I'm using right now, you can get for $70 a year. That's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's from Microsoft's point of view, it makes a great deal of sense. And companies will pay it because they want the support. And that's fair. But for individuals, I don't see this being a thing people are going to be jumping on the bandwagon of.
And for a business, the business prices are different, of course.
Right.
It's as low as $8.25 a month per user. So, you know, $8 a month per user doesn't sound bad, but what if I have 100 users in my you know, office? So now $800 a month? No, I don't want to pay that much.
But it's also $100 a year per person.
For personal only. Yeah, so they try to distinguish that by putting in the different versions. So if each person in the company signs up for a personal version, that would probably work. But then when they all have the same billing address and the same credit card, they'd get flagged.
Right. Well, no, but $8.25 a month is $99 for 12 months.
Right, per person.
Per person. So it's $100 a year per person. Now, companies may not find that to be a difficult amount of money to pay. In addition, there's a mindset in businesses, I just need to know what it's going to cost every year. Once I know that, I'm good to go.
And then I can bill it onto my customers.
I can bill it onto my customers. I can amortize it over time, yada, 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 yada. So, you know, from a business perspective, this is not a bad deal and may, in fact, be a very good deal. But from a consumer point of view, an individual consumer point of view, I would question the sanity of anybody who would pay a yearly fee to Microsoft to be held hostage if they decide not to pay next year.
Yeah, we ran into that in the Mac world a few years ago when the Adobe Creative Suite got discontinued for Creative Cloud subscription only services, and so all the individual like freelance people don't want to pay $50 a month for the Adobe Suite. What was interesting, it was you know, the typical Adobe Suite was like $2,000, and most people bought it every 3 or 4 years, which worked out to like $50 a month. But they don't want to have to buy it and have to pay every month. Adobe on their side has said it's been very popular because people can budget it now, and we know it's $50 a month per person. So again, if your creative department in your business has 10 people working on it, you know, suddenly that's $500 a month for the Creative Suite.
Well, like I was saying when I originally said, you know, Microsoft can even skip a year or so without adding any major features to, say, doing this or doing that, and they still make money.
Right.
Because, like Nick was saying, you know, yeah, you don't pay that yearly subscription fee, you're getting turned off, and now you can't do any work.
And that's what they've said they want to do. Instead of waiting 3 or 4 or 5 years between major releases, they can just roll out new versions to the subscription all the time. So,
yeah, that's really working well with Windows 10. Yeah.
Theoretically, that will be an advantage in the Office Suite, but we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Brick right. your machine in a different way.
Yeah.
Right. Hello? Now, for those of you who do not trust Microsoft and do not trust Google, there's the Apple Suite. There's the Zoho. Zoho has a set of stuff online. LibreOffice has a beta online that's not really ready for prime time yet. So if you wanted to do collaboration, you can't use LibreOffice yet. But for obviously for individual documents, et cetera, then LibreOffice is fine.
And when I was looking at the poll, my thought was I hardly ever use a word processor at all. The only typing I do is pretty much in the Mail app.
Yeah.
So well, I
that's
really
just it. People aren't working the way they used to work, and the way they used to work is what Microsoft is geared toward. But people have kind of stopped working that way in a lot of cases, and that's part of why Microsoft is down in the numbers at this point.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to the phones. We got our friend Al Mosher calling in.
Good morning, guys. Good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Al. Go ahead.
Hey, just one other thought regarding the subscription versus having a standalone version that doesn't change. And I guess that's really the key phrase. For Adobe especially, nothing more frustrating than flying along using your software and they come out with a new version and techniques and tools that you're used to either disappear yep. or get buried and you're on a learning curve again.
Everything point. Changes, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would rather.
Yeah, it's a real problem when you have that kind of familiarity with a product. And then it's either discontinued or radically changed.
Exactly. I mean, I would buy. I'm a big Photoshop Elements user, and so I'm buying a new version about every 2 or 3 years, just to not get too far behind. But there's always little surprises of, well, I'm used to doing this, and that doesn't work anymore. Yep. And I assume the case is probably true with Microsoft Office, because even though I haven't played with that since '97, I'm an old fogey.
Yeah. Well, you're not missing all that much, quite honestly. The features in Microsoft Office for the average user are exactly the same as the features in Google Docs and Apple. What is it called this week?
iWork.
Pages.
Pages, Keynote,
iWork,
Number.
Right,
yep.
right, and iWork. Pages. And in LibreOffice, for the average user, there's the only difference is the front end. right? The GUI, the way it, the look and feel. And consequently, once you get used to something, you're right, Al. The fact that they often change is painful. Google Docs has not changed in quite a while. And neither, as I recall, at least, has iWorks, although I could be wrong about that. I don't use it often enough to notice the lesser menu choices.
Yeah, especially in the online version.
Yeah. Right, but that's right.
And that's why most people don't upgrade their software. One is the expense, and two is they don't want to learn something new. And so what we've been telling people for years on this show is you're going to upgrade to the new version of something. You might as well upgrade to something that's free or easier. Don't, you know, get stuck in the rut that you have to use Microsoft Office. Even if you are in an office where everyone else uses Microsoft Office, you don't have to.
I did that for 20 years at RIT. We were very much a Microsoft shop, and I worked with Microsoft, and I worked with their products, and I bought them, and I supported them, but I personally use LibreOffice on a Windows, on a Linux box, and nobody ever noticed. And toward the end, I had switched to Google Docs, and nobody ever noticed, because I can read Microsoft documents, and I can write Microsoft documents in both LibreOffice and in Google Docs, and it's seamless. And in fact, I had a secret that I'm letting out now. Faculty would often come to me with very complex documents that Microsoft, quite frankly, had screwed up, particularly when there were formulas in them and things like that. They would just end up with gibberish in the middle, and they could no longer read them. Well, the reason for that, of course, is that when Microsoft comes to a problem in their document, they just throw up their hands and say, I can't go on anymore. When you open it in LibreOffice or in Google Docs, the program says, let's skip that part and go to the next thing we understand. So you get 99% of your document back, and maybe you have to put in a paragraph or two or three, which is a whole lot less painful than losing the entire document.
Heck yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom.
You're welcome,
Sorry,
Al.
We kind of went beyond you. Sorry.
No problem. Take care.
Have fun. Yeah. I guess as more people, you know, folks, LibreOffice is free. Google Docs is free. Download them and give them a try. You're not hurting anything. You're not losing anything.
Yeah, really. All you're doing is, well, by using it and saving copies, you're just creating extra backup copies of your original document.
That's right.
So what's wrong with having an extra copy somewhere safe up on the cloud?
Depending on how quick your download speed is, you can have LibreOffice up and running in 10 minutes. Google Docs is just a matter of logging in, and you can do everything you need to do. Again, one of the things I love about Google Docs is the ability to do voice typing.
All right, tell you what, Nick, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after these words, folks.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, everybody. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Where is he?
And I'm Nick Francesco. Sorry, I forgot I muted my mic.
That's okay, buddy.
You need to put some oil on your chair there.
Yeah.
Is it still squeaking?
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to it because I'm just the only one in this room 99% of the time.
WD-40.
WD-40 is your friend.
Always.
It's WD-40 and duct tape.
Yeah.
If it's moving and it shouldn't, duct tape. It's not moving and it should, WD-40.
Yeah. It solves everything. And if you get hungry, you can even drink it.
You could drink it.
Well, WD-40 is literally like a form of vegetable oil, I believe.
Yeah, it is. It just doesn't taste good.
Yeah, no. not recommended daily diet, that's for sure.
Right. Shall I read a new news item?
Yeah, I was going to say, since your printer isn't messed up like mine is, and I'm going to have to investigate.
With lists of billions of compromised credentials floating around on underground forums and in text-based pages across the internet, it's difficult for anyone to keep up with the potential threat from breached passwords. That's why, as part of its security efforts during Safer Internet Day, we had Safer Internet Day last week, Google has released a new add-on for the Chrome browser that automatically and securely checks website credentials against known password breaches. The Chrome browser extension, called Password Checkup, is available now. It securely checks credentials used to log into websites, whether they're manually entered or stored in Chrome's password manager, against hash credentials stored in an encrypted database of billions with a B of compromised accounts maintained by Google. Ellie Burstein, head of Google's anti-abuse research, said that the protocol behind the service is being presented as a standard for securely checking account security and that the interface may be offered as an open application interface in the future, which would be phenomenal. Checking for password breaches is a sensitive operation. Google's security team has been offering a password checks for G Suite users for some time, but doing the same thing for the rest of users' credentials is a much more delicate privacy dance. Users don't want to just hand over their passwords and accounts to Google's openly, and Google has a data set we don't want to publicly share, said Kurt Thomas, staff research scientist at Google. So Password Checkup uses a combination of anonymization and cryptography to protect the exchange using a technique called blinding to create a secret search index. Credentials are anonymized with an argon2 hash function. This makes sense to me. I used to do security. So this is all very exciting to me. For most people, it's probably Serbian. To create a search, a lot of people speak Greek now, to search for Google's database and encrypted with an elliptic curve cryptography. On your end, you get an index that only you know, said Thomas, and that index is both hashed and only a partial encoding of the information. It can't be used to recreate a complete version of logon credentials. The back-end database contains data culled from password dumps on underground marketplaces. Currently, it contains terabytes of data on over 4 billion compromised credentials and is constantly being updated by Google's threat research team. The database and the API to access it could be applied to a number of future cases, said his team is open to suggestions on how to best use it. Potentially, the database could be a valuable resource to companies' internal threat hunting team seeking hints of compromise to critical accounts on third-party services. But for now, Burstein said, the goal is to reach internet users in a way that's transparent and easy to use, regardless of whether they have a security team to back them up. And I've provided a link, which Steve is probably already putting online, for the Google Chrome extension. So how sure are you that your passwords are secure? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
What was interesting is it doesn't look like Google is using Troy Hunt's Have I Been Pwned list. They're making their own. So right. Someone's got to merge those two together and make sure that everything is caught
somewhere. Yeah, you cover both bases.
It's certainly possible that he is using them. I mean, that's...
Well, but I wouldn't want to assume.
Right. Well, I don't know if the Have You Been Pwned list is proprietary. I mean, if he's copyrighted that or any sort of thing.
Well, he does have
all public data anyway.
Yeah, and he has APIs so that you can write your own programs to look into it.
Right. But yeah, there's just I'm watching. Talk about collaboration. I'm watching Steve. He opened up the document. He's grabbing the URL and he'll paste it into the other program right now. That's just very cool.
You're seeing my screen and not my face?
I see your face in the little circle up at the top. And I see the little hot pink, I believe it is, cursor that says that's where you are.
Interesting.
So I can see you as we collaborate.
Nice.
I know that someone else is in, and I can see where you are, and well, at least where your cursor is. Not where you're looking, but where your cursor is at the moment. And I see that you copied it out. So or highlighted it, which I assume meant you were then going to copy it.
Yeah.
That's the collaboration part of Google Docs, to go back to that. But yeah, the big thing is, you know, we've been preaching this for years. Do not reuse passwords. Let me repeat that. Do not reuse passwords. If you use one password on one site, even if you use the same username, pick a different password for another site. That way, we talk about this all the time. You don't necessarily have to do anything wrong to have your password, username and password stolen. The problem could be at the other end. But if the other end gets hacked, it means they get that password, but not any of the others, because you use different passwords in all those places. And that only works if you do use different passwords in other places. So particularly when it comes to something like your banking and things like that, pick a unique password. Do not reuse passwords. And you can then use this extension, or you can always go to haveibeenpwned.com, but you can also use this extension to tell you, it'll warn you if, in fact, your password has been compromised in any way, and then you can change that password. And instead of having to then sit down and say, oh, man, now I got to remember where else I used that password, no, you don't, because you didn't use it anywhere else.
And if you use a password manager, then let that generate the password for you. I just read an interesting article, I should post it, from Mike Elgin on security, that the typical suggestion to make a long password with letters and numbers and symbols isn't necessarily good. You know, password 123456 7 exclamation point meets all those criteria. But it is a really bad password. So if you come up with a password yourself, there's going to be a pattern to it, and that pattern can be figured out by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a lot of the research shows that websites that require a symbol, 90% of the people use an exclamation point at the end of the password.
Right.
And so the good guys will look through all the password breaches and figure out these patterns in the passwords. And trying to use leet speak, like putting an at sign in instead of an A, the bad guys know that too. And so it's very hard to make a really secure password that doesn't have a pattern in it, because people use patterns all the time.
Right. And if you generate the password and let your password manager remember it, you don't have to remember it. So you can make it 26 characters if you want to.
Yep.
And that is, believe me, that's secure. Until everybody's got quantum computers, a 26-character password is pretty secure.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's go to the phones. We got Pat from Webster on the phone. Hello, Pat.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Very good.
How can we help you today?
Well, first of all, it's not a big problem. It's just a little inconvenient. I can say this. I use a Chromebook, and my husband works with a PC. My question is, I believe I used to be able to do this. When I send a link to him, if I want to send it to AOL on his PC, I used to be able to do it straight through. But now I have to go through Gmail for him to get it in the AOL to read it. And I was wondering why that's happening now.
Are you sending the link from your email account?
Yes, it's the same email account, but I used to be able to send it from my Chromebook to AOL on his PC. And when he would open it, it would be black. It wouldn't be blue.
So when you create a new message and paste the link in,
right,
it doesn't make it to him?
That's right. I have to go through Gmail for him to open it in AOL. And I didn't used to have to do that when I first got the company.
Maybe.
I'm not sure how you did it without using Gmail.
So really?
Are you logging into the AOL website on your Chromebook to see your email?
Well, when I send the link, I used to be able to go right, open AOL, and just send it, and my husband would open it in email account. It would be blue, but when he's opening it of late, he can't see it, and now I go through Gmail.
It sounds like AOL may have changed something.
Yeah.
Is that you may have to, I've seen this once or twice, you may have to hit the space bar after the link.
Hit the space bar after the link?
Right. What happens is the editor that you're using for AOL
right.
may not recognize it as a link until you're done. And just pasting it doesn't make it done. Adding that space makes it done.
So when I send the link, I blew it, and then I hit copy, and then I paste it.
And then after you paste it, type a space or press return.
When I'm all before I put it into an email.
No, after you put it into the email, but before you send the email.
Oh, okay. Before I send it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Right. So right after you paste,
right.
hit the space bar or return.
Okay. Great. Thank you. We'll let you know. We'll keep you posted.
All right. Thank you. Please. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Which goes to show you can still use your AOL email address on a Chromebook. It doesn't care.
Absolutely.
Of course, Google would prefer you use Google, but
just like any other web page.
Yep.
Yeah. AOL is not dead yet. You just don't get all the free disks and CD coasters that you used to.
I found one the other day. It's sitting over there somewhere, and it's got 70 free hours. I'm going to get them.
All right. Go for it.
Yeah, it used to be we loved getting those floppies because you could reuse them. And I was annoyed when they switched to CDs because you couldn't reuse them anymore. It just became a coaster or a Frisbee or something. It wasn't it wasn't an actual usable floppy now. The good old days when floppies were useful. In the early days of computing, the operating system, your application, and all of your documents would fit on one floppy disk.
That's the truth. And it was a small floppy disk.
Yeah.
When I had when I was selling Osborne computers, they were 90K disks.
Yeah.
And you would boot up, say, if you were going to do word processing, you'd boot up into WordStar or whatever. And that would be one 90K floppy. And then you had a whole 90K for your documents. And because everything was basically just text in those days, you could fit a whole book.
Yeah.
Onto, I wrote, like I said, I've written 3 books in Google Docs, but I've written far more than 3 books in my old, and plays and everything else, my old Osborne 1. And you could put a lot of stuff on a 90K floppy when it's basically all just text.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phones. We've got Eric from Canandaigua. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing peachy, as somebody would say.
Well, that's good. I've got a problem that I've used Windows forever, and I've used QuickBooks and Quicken forever. What's that going to mean for all of us? I bought a Chromebook, and I'm currently trying to get that set up. And I've used Ubuntu before, but those two programs are not going to use Quicken. And the question I have is my only option when to go to an Apple device.
Well, you can use the Quicken online instead of as an app. They have a web version that you can use. But there are alternative checkbook financial programs available for Chrome, and I'm looking to find them. Do you know anyone offhand, Nick?
Well, let me. If you really want to use Quicken or QuickBooks or whichever one, there is an app for the Chromebook called Crossover, which if you've got a newer Chromebook and a slightly faster, you know, the $179 Chromebook won't do this, but the higher-end Chromebooks will run Windows apps like Quicken.
Wow.
If your Chromebook is you know, 4 gigs of RAM and a fairly decent processor, and, of course, Crossover is free, so it certainly doesn't hurt to try it. You've already got a copy of Quicken that you could put on it. You can certainly run Quicken on your Chromebook, and Crossover or Wine, as they call it, on Linux will do exactly the same thing. But Steve is right. The online version of Quicken is probably your best bet.
To be the most familiar.
Right, right, right. And it will do, from what people tell me, it will do everything that they need to do. I'm not a deep Quicken user, but the people who are say it does everything. So,
all right.
There is a Quicken online, and that may be your best bet. And again, you've already got a license, so you should be able to use that online as it is. And it's free. Quicken Online is free. Ha, ha, ha.
That doesn't sound right.
Look at you. That doesn't sound right.
Free trial, maybe?
Yeah, well, they give you so much room. I know that. And they've been advertising that you can use it on the cloud. I haven't tried that yet, but I should do that probably before I go to the crossover on the new machine.
Yeah. Yeah, something to try at least. Right. Now, some people don't like the idea of putting their financial stuff on the internet. It's just another point of failure if Quicken gets breached. But most of your stuff is already online without you realizing it or not, all your transactions you've done. So far, banks have been pretty safe. It's the intermediate people that lose your information.
Hmm. Well, all right. You know, there are a million people probably in New York State that use Quicken, so I don't know how they're all going to handle that. But
yep.
I was just going to keep one Microsoft program going on one computer just for that.
Yeah, that's another way to do it, yep.
Yeah. Yep. But certainly try the online version. What the heck?
Yep.
I mean, it's not going to cost you anything, and you may find it does everything you need, and you'll be perfectly happy with it on your Linux box and your Chromebook and your phone and pretty much everywhere else.
Well, I will let you know.
Thanks.
Thanks, you guys. Have a good one.
All right. Have fun. Yeah, it's pretty amazing that, you know, everybody's going online these days. It's when you have a secure connection, huh? You got that HTTPS.
See where you come from.
Oh.
Yep.
As long as you've got that secure connection, you've got a decent shot at staying secure. I always put it that way now because it could be a breach at the other end too.
Yep.
All right.
It's certainly worth a try.
Okay, we're going back to the phones. We got a few here. We got Steve from Ontario. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, guys.
Hello, sir. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, I've got a laptop that kind of the hard drive kind of died. I bought it to one of the local station, local dealers, and he told me that my Windows 10 was corrupted. So for what he wanted to charge reload it and put all the updates on, I ended up just buying a used computer from him that already had Windows 10 on it. So, I mean, he was able to get, he was able to transfer all the data that I needed off the drive and didn't format the drive off that laptop. I still got the drive, but I was just wondering, I'm sure there's a way for me to reload Windows 10. Is there a way for me to retrieve the Windows 10 key out of that drive?
Generally, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends if it was an OEM pre-install, then it's tied to the hardware address of the computer. And if on another computer, if you download the Windows 10 standalone installer, you then write that to like a flash drive. And then on the dead computer, you boot that flash drive and reinstall Windows. It should pick up that OEM license key from the hardware itself.
Knowing how to do that is
the trick.
Right. Have you checked the box to see the hardware itself to see if there's a sticker with the product key on it?
No. It was actually a loaner from my brother-in-law, and I believe it originally came with Windows 7. And he upgraded to Windows 10.
Oh, if he did the upgrade, then he should have a license key in that upgrade box.
Unless he did the upgrade online and he uses it during the time when you could upgrade 7 to 10.
And then it would have
just picked the same Windows key.
Yeah, would he use the Windows 7 key or emailed him a new Windows 10 key?
Yeah, I mean, I believe he did it online. Unfortunately, he's out of town. I can't really talk to him now. But
you can always...
The thing is, I mean, I've got a couple old SATA drives from another machine that kind of crapped out on me. I'm one of those people who keep stuff until they die.
Yep.
So I was going to get one of those hard drive docking stations where, you know, where you plug it in USB 3 and you can plug in SATA drives into it and get the... So, I was going to get some data off that, but...
Yep.
That docking station would also, I could also use it for that, I believe it's just a 2.5-inch drive on the old Toshiba laptop. So I was just kind of hoping that if I can get that machine up and running again, I mean, I've been IT for a long time. You blew my mind when you mentioned an Osborne 1, Nick. That was my first computer.
Really?
I had one back in 1980, out of it, Leon's downtown.
Oh, nice place. Good people. I also sold Osborne's myself, and I had one. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, and those things sold themselves. $200 to get the single side double density floppy instead of the single side single density stuff.
Right.
But
so
yeah.
Now, I mean, what you guys are saying is there's. If I download Windows 10 and put it on a flash drive, and I should be able to then try to boot the machine off of the flash drive, and you think it'll pick up the key that's on the hard drive?
The key's not on the hard drive. The key's in the computer.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, that's a good shot that it will work.
Okay, I mean, do I just download it from Microsoft?
Yeah, I can post another link to the OEM ISO download.
Okay, sounds great. I really appreciate it.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, we got to take a break. But we will be back with more with Nick, Steve, and myself. So just sit tight, and if you want, go ahead. We still got a couple lines open. You can call in with your questions, and we've even got a question on the text board that we'll answer once we come back from these great messages. So you stay tuned right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition and the second hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Nick Francesco.
That works. Hey, Nick, we did have one question come in. Hold on a minute. Let me get it up here. This person texted in, and they wanted to know, they've got an 84-year-old that doesn't like change of any kind. She currently is running. You're ready for this? Your sentence, so you can. Running XP and just uses the machine for email, Facebook, and pay a couple bills. Thanks for the show. I sent her back, Chromebook.
Yeah, it depends. Okay, if
hold on 1 second. She just typed in something else. Just as a follow-up, she has trouble seeing, so is it possible to connect a larger flat-screen monitor to a Chromebook?
Yes, absolutely. There's two ways to do it. One is most of the Chrome laptops have HDMI ports, which will connect to any HDMI monitor.
Yeah.
Also, you can buy a Chromebox, which is a Chromebook that's without it's not a laptop, it's just a little hockey puck, and you attach a regular keyboard, mouse, and whatever size monitor you want to it, and that's your system. So in terms of paying bills, that happens through a browser, so that's not a change. Facebook happens through a browser.
Yep.
That's not a change. And email, assuming that she was on something like AOL or whatever, that's through a browser, so that's not a change.
Right.
The only change would be instead of having to open up the only change would be the look of the main screen.
Yeah. Very simple for her.
Right, right, and it's actually simpler. So she may not like change, but she may like that change.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be easier to handle.
Yeah, less things to look around, especially, you know, you minimize what items are down on that taskbar.
Right. One of the things that you can do on a Chromebook is you can take, you've got that little bar across the bottom with the icons. And and you click on those and stuff opens up. You know all about that.
Yeah.
One of the things that you can do is you can take a web page and put it on that bar at the bottom. So she can click on a link and it automatically opens Facebook. Done. Click on a link, automatically opens her bill paying site. Click on a link, automatically opens her email page.
Yep.
So it actually becomes easier. So you can talk to her about that. It will be a change, but it will be an easier change. Tell her it's a lot like going from a standard to an automatic.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying, though, I mean, and they could hook it up to a bigger TV, which would mean that the screen's going to be a lot easier for her to see and maneuver around on it. TVs right. have gotten so cheap now. I mean, getting a 30-inch screen is no big deal.
Right. And I have a friend who's got a Chrome box, and she has she's visually impaired. She has it hooked up to a 70-inch TV.
Yeah.
Which makes the letters big enough.
Yeah, thank
you. She gets close. Yeah. That's enough. She can read them well, and that's important to her. And,
yep.
and so, you know, there's the point is that a Chromebook is extremely versatile, and you can do all of that stuff and find all of that stuff.
Yep, yep.
And if you do want, don't need the laptop aspect of it, then the Chrome box just sits under your TV, and you can sit on your couch with a Bluetooth keyboard and work away.
Away you go, yeah.
Right, Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, or... They also have Bluetooth keyboards that have pads on them, touch pads.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you can do all of that off of that. And so, yeah, a Chromebook really has become, because so many people do so much of their stuff online anyway,
yeah.
A Chromebook becomes an inexpensive new computer that does everything you want it to do. Win-win.
Yeah, all the way around.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying all the way around, and especially now with your phone. And if you hit some particular spot and say there's no internet connection, you can tether it to your phone and get connected to the internet.
I remember the look on your face last week when I told you about that. It was like Christmas.
Oh, heck yeah. No, you know what I equated to?
What?
That evening you came over and put... Oh boy!
Should I have called you the next morning?
No, that was okay. I was safe this time.
Yeah.
Mom, Dad forgot to go to bed again.
So you can do all kinds of things with a Chromebook that you didn't used to do. And the things that Dave is talking about is tethering your Chromebook to your phone. Or I suppose your phone to your Chromebook.
Yeah.
The idea being that if you're, let's say you have unlimited data, and you're somewhere where there's no network connection, well, then all of a sudden, oh my God, I can't use my Chromebook. Well, you can because they work offline, but even if that's not something you're interested in doing, you can now tether it to your phone, and it'll work through your phone.
Well,
that may be a little slower than working through your home internet, but it works.
Well, like at work, you know, they've got the... the network locked down. You can, they lock you out from going anywhere or doing anything, you know, and rightfully so. So it's very easy. Now I take my Chromebook, tether it to my phone, and during my lunch I can sit there and go, you know, onto the internet and not be restricted. I love it.
Right, right. And not interfere with anything going on.
Yeah, and I'm not getting into any of their files or anything else.
Right, right. Makes sense.
Yeah, well, I had one person, how are you getting on the internet? I said, tether it to my phone. You can do that? I can now with the Chromebook.
And that's and a lot of companies do that, so you don't play Facebook all day long.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, so many people use and abuse it, so that's why they've locked it down. And because, you know, we have so much information that we deal with on a daily basis as far as people, you know, you can't afford to do that. But tell you what, we've got Paul on the phone from Brighton right now, so let's go to see talk to Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes. I got two questions. I hope we can fit them in. The first is I've got a Windows 10 PC, and I have a USB mouse that's connected, you know, hardwired connected USB mouse. When it boots up in the morning or when it you know, wakes up, the mouse often freezes or just disappears. The cursor disappears or freezes. And I can get it back by unplugging the USB from the computer and then plugging it back in again. What's going on?
Have you tried a different USB port on the computer?
Yes, I've done that too.
Updated the drivers?
USB mouse drivers are pretty generic.
Yeah, but hey, way Windows lately is updating.
Yep.
Don't the drivers update when Windows updates?
Usually,
in theory.
Sorry, what brand mouse is it?
It's a Microsoft mouse.
It may just be a faulty mouse.
Yeah, that's where I was going. If a different USB port runs into the same problem, it could be the mouse is dying.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's as I say, when I plug it back in, it's fine. So
you just don't turn off your computer.
I've done that. Sure. Okay, well, I guess we're kind of grasping at straws here.
A little bit, yeah. Try,
well, if you can borrow somebody else's mouse.
Yeah, or try that mouse on another computer and see if the same thing happens.
Yeah.
Yes, it does happen. It doesn't, excuse me. On another computer, it does not happen. Yeah.
So then that points to a driver issue in the computer, I would say.
Okay.
Remove the mouse driver and re-add it, see if that helps.
Okay. All right, I'll give that a try. The second question.
Did you once have a different mouse on that machine?
Oh, probably not. It would be so long ago, I just couldn't remember. Yeah.
But that
old.
Well,
my thought is that if you did, then there might be a driver still in there for that old mouse.
I hear you, yeah.
Yeah.
But Windows, this was, I've had this ever since, well before Windows 10 came along, so.
In that case, you did an upgrade to Windows 10?
Yes, from Windows 7.
Then it might, in fact, be what I just said. It might be that the old Windows 7 driver. Mm-hmm. Is because when Windows 10 first came out, a lot of drivers were not ready.
Okay.
So they used the old Windows 7 driver, and it may be that the Windows 7 driver is still in there.
All right. That's worth pursuing.
Yeah.
The second question I have, and this actually refers to two different computers, because one's a laptop and one's that PC I just mentioned, is I run Chrome frequently. And sometimes the menu icon in the upper right-hand corner, which sometimes is three dots, and lately it's and one of the computers it switched over to a little orange circle, and in the other computer it switched to a gray circle, but the three dots are gone. Was that something that was updated on Chrome recently?
Not that I've seen on my Chrome, although I don't use Chrome too much.
I had that at one point, and I can't remember why. I did see that. I think it meant there was an update or a...
Yeah, we're frantically looking.
Yeah.
There was an update to Chrome, because I've always notice that in Chrome, if you go in and check your version, it will tell you if there's an update. But I haven't had it tell me there's an update when I know there is one, and until I go and check.
Yeah, I mean, the last for a long time, the versions that I had had the three dots, three vertical dots in the upper right-hand corner. And now I've got these two circles, like little, you know, disks, one of which is, on one computer it's orange, and on the other it's gray.
Yeah, I've still got the three dots.
Right, and it's got an up arrow in it?
Pardon?
It's got a little up arrow in it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it can be green, it can be orange, it can be gray.
Yeah. But they've gone away from the dots, apparently.
No, it means that there's some sort of uploader, hold on, I think you can actually set that under settings.
There's a download option. When you have something downloading, you get a new circle, but it shouldn't change the three-dot menu that's already there. And I've got a little circle with a face in it, which is my account I'm logged in as, next to my three dots.
Yeah.
So it may indicate that there's an update waiting, or one of your extensions needs updating. We're checking to see if there's anything more obvious than that.
Isn't all this supposed to be kind of standard and predictable?
Yeah, what it means, I believe, is that there is an extension that needs an update.
How would you know that?
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. But if you go into that menu and into extensions and look through your extensions, you should see that orange circle again, which means that, or you can just update all your extensions, I guess. Under More Tools, Extensions, you can just click the Update button and it will update all your extensions. And that should bring back your three dots.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that. I've been using Chrome a long time.
Yeah, that's a fairly new thing. Okay. Generally, they're supposed to update by themselves. I don't know why it wouldn't.
Auto updates turned off?
I didn't. Yeah, maybe you have auto updates turned off.
Yeah, a lot of people like to know what the updates are before they automatically install.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
But,
you can turn under, if you go into settings and in the search bar type extensions, you can see that there's extensions for under sync. So if you click on that sync thing, it talks about what you can sync, and you may have accidentally turned off syncing extensions, so that what'll happen is instead of updating them, it'll put that little arrow there that says you got an update waiting for your extensions.
Okay, that's a good point. I may have missed that.
I mean, that's why normally you wouldn't see that, because extensions auto-sync.
Right, right.
But it may be that you didn't have that set up.
On sync, it says, on my machine, it says, enter your passphrase to start sync.
Yes, it wants your Google password, Google Gmail password.
Okay, maybe that's what was it. Issue.
Which is the same one you use to log in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a help. Thanks very much.
There you go.
All right.
Take care.
Yeah. Sure. You too. Yeah.
So you're supposed to notice there's something weird about the menu and go ask someone what it means.
Yes.
Sound like your name.
Apparently.
Well, and that's the normal thing, right? I mean, that's
okay, right.
Once you know it, it's a simple thing to now you just see it and you go, oh yeah, that, but it's finding it out that first time. And part of the problem is everybody does this now. They're all trying to make it easier, they're trying to make it less wordy so that it's more international, yada, yada, yada. So instead of actually putting up words that tell you update your extensions, you get this little circle thing, which doesn't tell you anything until you know that's what it means.
Yep, yep. All right, tell you what, we got one more caller. We got Roger from Ontario. Go ahead, Roger.
Hey, Nick, crazy story. So I installed a clock radio on my microwave. I was listening to jazz in the morning, and your segment came on about security issues and you don't trust nothing. Now, the story is I downloaded Facebook Messenger, right? And basically, it picked up on my keywords because I was just talking to my girlfriend and I was reading a newspaper article. An advertisement for a Pepsi vending machine just came up out of the blue. That's like a one in a million chance, man.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's a well-known thing. Facebook Messenger is well-known for listening in, turning on your microphone and listening to your conversations so that it can then present you ads in Facebook related to things that you've been talking about. It also... access your
but
GPS.
Nick, wouldn't you agree that's kind of creepy, man?
Everybody,
and it's likely you agreed to that.
We all think that's kind of creepy. I've been telling people. Go ahead, Steve.
I say it's likely you agreed to that in the Facebook Messenger terms and conditions that popped up that no one ever reads.
Right, that no one ever reads, and it listens to your microphone, and it also accesses your GPS. So it knows where you go.
Even
so
if you turn off
say,
location.
Oh, you were at Burger King the other day. Here's ads for McDonald's.
I just thought it was a crazy story, and I had to talk to you about it because I heard your segment on the radio. I was listening to Nat King Cole, and that segment came up. That little clip you guys do, you know, for the radio station. So that was awesome. I just feel like we've lost all total security on everything, you know. I mean, I don't trust nobody.
Well, then you're going to want to take Facebook Messenger off your phone. That's a simple reality. If you want the convenience of Facebook Messenger, you have to accept the creepiness of being spied on. If you want to not be spied on, you have to take off Facebook Messenger. There's no middle ground here. You cannot turn off the creepiness.
Yep. And lost him. The other thing we see happen is they watch the messages go by, and you chat about some topic on Facebook Messenger, and then you see ads for that thing in Facebook. So not only are they listening to you, they're watching what you type as well.
Right. Yeah, it's creepy. He's right. It's creepy. And what the thing he was talking about is I do a computer minute every Thursday at 7:40 a.m. and 4:40 p.m. and on weekends as well. And I don't have those in my head, but also Sunday mornings I know. But you can. So that's my little computer minute thing going on there.
Are they listed online anywhere, Nick?
They're listed. Yes, actually, they are. Shockingly enough, at asknick.com, you can hear. You can read. No, here the old ones. The latest one is only up on Jazz 90.1. So you would listen to it live, but I have older ones listed at asknick.com. On the right-hand side under original stuff, I've got 106 of them up there, as a matter of fact. 106 minutes! Actually, it's 107.
107 up there now, yeah.
Why does it say 106? I apparently can't program.
I tell you what, before the break, let's go to, we've got Ron from South Bristol. Go ahead, Ron.
Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call.
Good. What's your question, sir?
So, I'm having some issues with my Chromebook printing to my printer. I've been through the setup process a half a dozen times. I go to my printer when it says, do you want to register it? There's a prompt there. I hit yes. It says you are now registered for Google Print. My Chromebook thinks that everything's fine. It says you constantly print it every time I want to print something, but nothing's coming out of the printer. So I'm just looking for some advice, something I should try to see if I can make this happen. Let me just throw this in. I also do have a Mac Air. When I bought the printer, it noticed the new printer on the network and installed the software. It printed a test page. It was so easy. So I know that it's got a connection through my network, but I just cannot get the printer to print anything from my Chromebook. So I'm having to email it from my Chromebook to either my Air or my mobile device, and I print it that way.
What model printer is it?
It's a Brother. I want to say 5750DW, I believe.
Yeah, so if it has AirPrint for Apple, it most likely has Google Cloud Print. We can check on Brother's website to be sure.
I did that already. And the prompt is on. When I go through the setup, part of the setup process, it says go to your printer and register your printer. I go to the printer, and on the screen display, it says, do you want to register this printer with Google Print? And I click yes. So I know the printer is interfacing with the Chromebook, but... And like I said, the Chromebook, it says successfully printed, but it never prints.
Weird. Let's see if there's anything
on...
So
the Chromebook is sending it, the printer is not receiving it. Interesting.
And the printer never shows any data being received, and it never even tries to print?
Nope, it doesn't even say. Usually, like if I send it through my Mac Air... it'll say data being received, and it never does that. And I've got a dual-band router, so I switched bands. I went from the low to the high just to see if maybe there was some interference on that wavelength, and the same thing happened. And I even went through, and I believe there's a way you can use your Mac as a server for a Google setup to do printing. I even tried that, and it won't work.
Right. So if you you have two, if you go into settings and type printer, you'll see two things. One is printers and the other is Google Cloud Print.
Correct.
So under Google Cloud Print, you can set up and manage your printers and et cetera, right?
Correct.
Yep. Into manage cloud printers,
there's an option to add your printer to the cloud print.
Right, or to just manage the printers that are already set up.
Right, well, what I did last time was I deleted it, and then I went back in and I added it again. And the same things happen. It just doesn't... I go through it because the computer, the Chromebook, sends a notice to the printer that says, do you want to register with Google Cloud? Yes, and nothing happens.
Let me ask you this. You've got a Chromebook. It's probably updated. So
right.
You've got in that printer settings section, you've really got two choices. One is Google Cloud Print, and the other is just printers.
Correct.
So if you go into printers, your choice there is set up or manage CUPS printers. Let's not worry about what CUPS means right now. But if you click on the blue add printer button, it should show you a list of your nearby printers, of which your Brother printer should show up.
Yeah, I just did that here at the studio, and all the studio printers showed up. I will not add them to my cloud account.
Yeah, right. But you can do that and then add it as if it were not a Google Cloud Print printer, but as if it were just a regular printer, just like you would with any computer.
All right, tell you what, we can come back to them in a minute, but we got to take... So stay tuned, and we'll just put you down here on hold, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the final half hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Nick Francesco.
Ah. Try that again,
that
Nick.
Worked.
I forgot. I'm so used to Dave pots me up, and I've got I was nice enough to mute myself, and then I forget to unmute.
And we just swapped a couple plugs around, so now we have you directly into the audio board.
Oh, how very exciting.
So it's a little less echoey.
There, I got his mic off.
Yeah, so we don't need his mic anymore.
So just talk for a moment, though, Nick.
I would be happy to talk for a moment. I find it not difficult to do that talking for a moment. Not a problem at all.
Cool.
If you can hear me,
yeah,
it works.
We got you loud and clear, and I've got you potted right in now that we know how to do this. Cool.
Yeah, hopefully you won't have to do it next week, but we'll see.
No, you got to get your butt here.
Yeah.
No running around the house.
Well, I've got to stop dancing on the tables. That's
and just that's, have Elaine cut out, chasing you.
Never. Never. Do we stay? Did is Ron gone? Did Ron hang up?
No, Ron's still here. I'm sorry.
Oh, hi, Ron. Okay, so one of the things you can do is something called cups printing. Cups. Excuse me.
Bless
beg
you.
Your pardon.
Bless
you. It's a printing system originally for Apple. Excuse me, for Unix-like computers. So Unix uses it, Linux uses it, Apple uses it, and Chrome uses it. And the way Cups works. Is it very easy, very, very much the way Microsoft does things as well. CUPS, in fact, stands for Common Unix Printing System. So under Chrome, you can either connect things as Google Cloud Print printers, which lets you print from anywhere on the internet to them, or you can hook them up as a CUPS printer or both, and now it's just your local printer. So if you go into settings and type printer in the search box, you get wrong mouse, you get two choices, printers and Google Cloud Print. And if you click on printers, you can set up or manage CUPS printers. So when you say add a printer, what it does is it finds all your nearby printers. And that may take a minute depending on your network. But once you find them, you can then add them just by clicking. You can add them to your network. It will find the driver. It might suggest a couple of different drivers, but one will be preferred. So pick that one. And it'll whoop and whir for a moment, and you should then be set up with your brother printer ready to go on your network. And again, that's going to be a local printer, right? That's so if you take your Chromebook to California, you can't print to your printer at home.
Yeah,
the whole point of Chromebooks is you don't print anymore anyway.
That's perfect. Okay, I'm going to give that a shot. If it doesn't work, I'll give you guys a call next week. Appreciate
Perfect.
All the help. Thanks much. Have a great day.
Thank you too, Ron. Have fun.
And does
let me turn my mic on. Does Chrome the Chromebooks have USB printer drivers, or does it have to be AirPrint or CloudPrint?
I missed the first half of that.
Does a Chromebook have USB printer drivers? Can you plug a printer directly in USB?
I've never tried that, but I suspect you can.
Because it's all down to the driver option. Hello? That was the whole thing with printing from the iPhone and iPad, mm-hmm. is that trying to load drivers for thousands of different printers just wouldn't work. And so Apple came up with AirPrint, which is a unified driver, and then Google has CloudPrint, which is their unified driver. What does Windows Phone do? Nobody cares because no one uses a Windows Phone.
But yeah, the Google Cloud Print was originally designed to, you register your printer, and now you can print from anywhere on the planet to it, which is convenient, certainly, except for then going to get your print. But being able to connect to it locally is you know, most people want to be right there when the print's out anyway. So being able to do that is a nice feature. And that wasn't available for the original Chromebooks. But as Chromebooks have updated and become more and more usable, that's happened. And of course, you can also turn a document into a PDF and mail it to somebody, and that's automatic as well. You can print to PDF, which is nice. And there's just a whole lot of pretty cool things. You can also save. Part of printing is you can save it to your Google Drive. So if you're using a program that doesn't connect automatically to Google Drive, you can go to print and say save to Google Drive from there, and it will do so. So there's a lot of flexibility just had to put my foot back down for a minute. There's a lot of flexibility in the Chrome printing system now that wasn't there originally.
Yep. All right, tell you what, we got another call on the phone. Let's talk to Mac from Rochester. Go ahead, Mac.
Hi, I know you've mentioned this 1,000 times, but could you tell me a good Apple product?
You're cutting out there. Sorry.
Yeah, can you say that again? Mac, you're cutting in and out.
I'm sorry. Could you give me a password manager for Apple product?
The Apple Keychain, which is built into every Apple device. And that will store your... In fact, you're probably already using it without realizing it. It stores your passwords for you. So when you log back into somewhere again, that's what's filling in the password. It will generate random passwords for you and then store them securely. You can see your list of passwords on the computer by going to the Applications folder and then the Utilities folder and then Keychain Access. And on an iDevice, you go into Settings and then, Accounts and Passcodes. And that will let you see what your saved passwords are for each site. And then you can open it up to see what the actual saved password is if you need to remember it yourself.
I'll have to listen to your rebroadcast because that was pretty quick. Thanks for that. And just could I say one more thing, please? Somebody called on my phone and asked if I wanted to be on the do not call list, and of course I quickly answered yes. That was the wrong thing.
Yeah, you don't want to say yes to a call. So the irony there is the do not call list will not call you to ask if you want to be on the do not call list.
Right.
But what they do is you say yes, or, you know, can you hear me, or is this whoever, you say yes. They splice you saying yes into them saying, do you want to buy our product for X thousand dollars? And then when you try to dispute the charge, they supply the recording that says you agreed to the charge. And so that's it's a very tricky and dangerous thing to get out of. You can't trust recordings anymore.
Yeah.
What can I do now? Anything?
Well, hopefully it wasn't malicious, but watch your
credit card statements. Yeah. If you're kind of the kind of person that just looks at your credit card bill once a month when it comes, you may want to start logging into your bank accounts. At least weekly, if not daily. My wife chides me all the time because I log in every day to see what's posted and is there something there that shouldn't be, and make sure that there aren't any malicious charges on your account.
Hey guys, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
you're
you.
Very welcome. And I'm gonna post a link.
I gotta be
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
To be honest, daily is not too often. Daily is not too often to check that stuff.
Yeah.
These days, it doesn't have to be you who made a mistake. It could be the bank that made a mistake, an honest mistake, or they got breached. So checking quite regularly, like, say, old daily, is probably a really good idea, because the sooner you catch it, the less money you lose.
And most banks and credit cards have a notification system, and there's a sort of a blanket company called Card Valet that a lot of different bank and credit cards use that will warn you of charges as they happen. So people will be checking out in our store. I run the credit card, and sometimes before it says approved at my end, their phone dings and says there's a charge.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it when, and I see that when I'm buying stuff on my own card, you know, the ding comes up. Yep. And it shows me that something was charged.
Yeah. All right, tell you what, let's squeeze in one more caller. We got Steven from Buffalo. Go ahead, Steven.
Hello. I use an Android phone, and I was curious to know, I use my FM tuner daily, and I was wondering, is there such thing as an AM tuner on a cell phone? I'm not really knowledgeable about radio tuners.
An AM tuner.
I've not found one on any phone, any certainly mainstream phone. FM tuners are more common, not on every phone, but on a lot of phones you can find an FM tuner. I have never seen an AM tuner on a phone.
I think a lot of it has to do with the antenna that AM uses. In many cases, with an FM tuner, your headphone wire becomes the antenna. But if you just want to listen to AM radio, there are several different apps. There is the iHeartRadio app, and there's the TuneIn app. And they will let you, through the internet, listen to pretty much any radio station anywhere in the world, including Jazz 90.1.
Okay, that's it. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Sure. And, of course, there is the Jazz 90.1 app, which gives you access to sound bites and a bunch of other stuff, as well as both the regular Jazz 90.1 stream and the Swingin' Blues channel as well. So you can download that app. It is absolutely free. And once you've installed it, you have constant access to Jazz 90.1, including you also, by the way, have access to all the archive recordings of sound bites. So there's just a gazillion things on there for you.
What is that, 7 years worth now, coming up on?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
We keep meaning to, before we started recording it ourselves, several of our listeners were recording. I think Jerry Seward has some of them. And that would be kind of nice to collect all of those old recordings.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, we go back to the 1st of December, Anno Domini 2001.
Wow.
Wow.
So that's quite a decent... We just finished 17 years of that.
Wow.
And let me just quickly point out the fact that that's a lot of storage space that I'm paying for every year. So if someone would like to donate to... Now that I'm retired, that's a lot more space than it used to be.
Yep.
So if somebody wants to hit that little orange, that little donation,
donations are gladly accepted.
What?
Donations are gladly accepted.
Yeah, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see under Please Help, there's a little yellow orange donate button.
Well,
anything helps.
There's 890 files in that archive folder.
Yes, yes. Yes, and they're not small files, and I do pay for that storage. So,
yep.
And I'm happy to do it. I was happier to do it when I was working.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go back a second to the Google Chrome menu icon changing. Apparently, that was a feature they added to Chrome, and an orange icon means there's an update that's been available. No, let's start with green. Green update. Green is 2 days. Orange means there's been an update for 4 days, and red means there's been an update for 7 days.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. That's why I don't see it, because I update pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, Nick, I was at the Rah-Rah group, Rochester Ham Operators, and a bunch of folks said to say hello. They still remember the time we came there and gave a presentation and wanted to know when you're going to join in again.
Yeah, they ask me that every time I give a presentation to them. They ask me when I'm going to join, and I keep telling them I don't have enough time to do the stuff I'm doing now. Although I did very much enjoy having a ham radio. I did not enjoy Morse code, but I did enjoy having a ham radio, and I understand now you don't need to know Morse.
Right, yeah, you don't need the code. But, yeah, I met a lot of great people there Wednesday night, and, of course, a lot of them, the minute I had to introduce myself, oh, Soundbites is here now. It's like, you know, we took a short break, and of course, a lot of them had to come on. So, how long have you guys been on the air? And I still had, and it still amazes me to this day, a number of folks come up and said, yeah, you used to be on the radio. And I, well, we still are. Really? Where?
Yeah.
And we've only missed maybe. We only missed a few weeks when we went from one station to where we are now at Jazz 90.1. Jazz 90.1? I said, yeah, dial us in. We're there every Saturdays from 12 to 2. Oh, I got to write this down. And he pulled out his pad and paper. He's got to write it all down. So, you know, hopefully we added a few more listeners that are now listening to us.
Brought them back. Yeah. I still got people that say we used to watch you on TV.
Yeah, still get that.
How long has the TV show been off? Although now with the, you know, we're on YouTube, and so you can be watching YouTube on your smart TV. So we're back on TV, Alf. I'm going to say that now.
Good way to look at it. Good way to look at it.
In fact, I set a customer up last week with a new Apple TV and showed them the YouTube app and our channel, and he was so excited about it. And he tried to get to it on Thursday, and he said, then he came in, and we were having a class at the office, and well, I couldn't find you. Well, we weren't live on Thursday.
Right.
But the old shows are there.
Yeah.
that we ended up turning off, what was it, Netflix. And like most companies and most of the things, when you want to cancel your subscription, they asked why.
Oh,
and one of the choices were there's too many other things to watch. I got a kick out of them admitting it. Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, it becomes a fact. You got to pick and choose because it is. It's getting that bad that, you know, there's just so much information overload out there that, you know, it's great.
Yep.
Find anything and everything that you want and, you know, just kick back to, you know, going back to our archives and that some of the, you listen to some of those old shows. Well, you'll be able to do this and that. And it's already come to fruition.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazes me because we were reminiscing at the meeting, excuse me, about different times and periods and who had what computer. You know, and again, some of the folks mentioned about you and the Osborne store and that. So, you know, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I loved my Osborne. We sold Osborne's, we sold K-Pros, we sold everything. And they were amazing little machines back in the day. You know, for $19.95, you got $2,500 worth of software and a free computer to run it on.
Nice.
There you go. Hey, buddy. Well, glad you were able to join us. And you know what? Hopefully your butt will be in the chair next week, but we got to call it a day for today. And we want to thank all the folks that called in. And, you know, as a matter of fact, we've got somebody trying to call right now. You know, as Nick always says, call sooner, call more often. We're here every Saturdays from 12 to 2, and we will be back in 166 hours. But you know what? Stay here, because George is about to come hit the airwaves with another great show of German music. And we will see you folks next week right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.